We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
What's up, everybody? We are back with another episode of Dice It Up on the Her Hoop Stats podcast. Awesome guest. Love watching her call games all season last year. Been a big fan. Love the way she analyzes the game. You may know her from the Sports Center days. She's everywhere. Athletes Unlimited, etc. The current play-by-play caller for the Phoenix Mercury, Cindy Brunson. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. So cool to be a part of your awesome show.
Oh, you know, we have some fun. I think we have some, it's great when we have two people who like call games or do color. And I'm just amazed by the similarities in your experiences and the, like you talking before the show about getting reps. It's like, I've heard Ice talk about that all the time.
Yeah, it matters. For me, every rep is a step. So every time I get an opportunity to call a game, I know I'm getting better. And I can tell you, going into this second season with the Phoenix Mercury, I am 1,000 times better than I was game one last year, because I've had so many games in between, in addition to that full first WNBA season.
Mm. Did doing Athletes Unlimited help as far as like just kind of thing?
1,000%. Athletes Unlimited got me into the pro women's basketball space, right? Yeah. Knocking on the door forever. I've lived out in Phoenix, Arizona, golly, since 2013. Amber Cox, the former COO of the team, gave me a couple of nibbles. And then, of course, she moved on to do a zillion other things. And now she's back running the Dallas Wings. But it was hard. I mean, there are so few opportunities here in the Valley. There are so many people who want to do them. They're lined up like planes on a runway. It's ridiculous. So to just continue to beat that drum and fight that fight was a lot, but Athletes Unlimited gave me an opportunity and I'm so grateful for it. They paired me with the Hall of Famer, Cheryl Swoops, so incomparable, so knowledgeable. And so we just had fun and fans heard that and they heard it sounding like we were just sitting on the couch with a red solo minus the swear words talking hoops. And then Phoenix decided, you know what? We want in on that too. So yeah, I owe everything to AU Pro Hoops.
Oh, I love that, Cindy. I love that you first start off just talking about growth, you know, just where you are in your career, where you've been in your career. It just says a lot that still at this point in your career, you're still looking to grow, especially in the women's basketball space and calling games. In this last year that you've been in the W Athletes Unlimited, where do you see the most growth that you've had personally and professionally working with the W and then some of those athletes in AU?
Just the close connectivity with the players and their stories, right? It's one thing to watch at home from your couch. And there's another thing about being in the arena and having the access to the athletes and the coaches. the facilitators in Athletes Unlimited and everybody that has a hand in growing the game, when you can have those one-on-one conversations, it just enhances your ability to do your job. And then the reps themselves, just looking at the docket, we've got a 40-game season this season in the WNBA. And I can go, all right, I know national TV is going to take a few of those away. The Ion road games will go away as well. But still, I'm going to end up doing more games in total than I did a season ago. So that means I'm going to be that much better at the end of this season when the Mercury make the playoffs for an 11th straight time. Just putting that out there.
Yeah, I mean, I know I talked to you about odds before because you got on to me for not betting Washington State during the Pac-12 tournament.
Hello. All they do is cut down the net.
Right. But yeah, I mean, I was like, there's no way Phoenix does not make the playoffs. You know, it just happens. BG's never missed. So, yep. And I guess what Diana's maybe missed once. I don't know how long Diana's been in the league forever.
Yes. I was going to say, yeah, she was there before playoffs started.
Yes.
So I did bring up am I saying it right? Wazoo. I mean, I'm from Texas, and now I live in the East Coast. I don't know too much about the West Coast life, but Wazoo, yes. Washington State. I read a story that you actually like bought a car because of the color, and it made you think of Washington State. Like, is that real?
That is real. When I was at ESPN, I needed a snow car, right? Connecticut, feet of snow during the wintertime. And this is before we had, you know, Carvana or anything. None of that. We just literally would go to the dealership and pick out a car. And I had no idea about snow cars. I kind of had a vibe as to, all right, it's got to be bigger and heavier, whatever. So I pull into the little Nissan lot and I see a Murano, bigger car, and it's crimson. I didn't even take it for a test drive. I said that one. That's what I want. So, yes, that is true.
I love that vibe. I just want to be that sure about every decision I make.
I love that car. So I'm not a car guy. I would much rather see my money hanging in my closet on shelves, handbags, whatever. So
same.
Yeah,
absolutely same. So yes.
I'll buy one car every decade or so. So
yeah, that's the only joy about living in New York. You don't need one. Yeah. But the ties to the West Coast, do you ever see yourself? I mean, I guess, is Arizona considered West Coast? It's on its own time zone.
Yes. It's on its own time zone. Half the year we're Pacific and the other half we're Mountain time zone. But yeah, I think just, you know, both big Arizona schools being in the Pac-12, I think it's just all considered West Coast. It's very chill. You rarely see a businessman wearing a suit. I mean, it's very relaxed.
Yeah, been to a bachelor party a time or two in Scottsdale.
I bet you have.
And I think there's a reason why James Harden still has his home in Tempe.
Oh, 1,000%. Practice facility at ASU has his face all over.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I will say, calling a game out there last year, working for the Connecticut Sun, Phoenix is one of my favorite places to go. Like, right? In just the 40-hour, I felt like, gap that we were there, the exploring the actual city, like, the nightlife was really cool, but also just the Phoenix Mercury and like, event presentation, just the game and how it makes you feel, like, that atmosphere. I loved it. I had felt like, okay, obviously, I've been to a number of W games because I'm sitting here calling games throughout the season, but this made me feel almost like I wish I was a fan right now. Like, I wish I was in the game, like, getting the T-shirts, like, yelling out different things. Like, what do you like most about just the Mercury and the atmosphere that they provide for you guys, especially at home?
I have been a fan ever since we landed in Phoenix in 2013, because before I got opportunities to call games, I was a season ticket holder for the entire time up until I got the, you know, call to sit courtside at the table doing TV. So I'm very familiar with how it's run. It's elite.
Yes.
And it is so engaging. The fan experience is second to none, in my opinion. I think the reason why the X Factor are so engaged is because they have no other option. There are so many opportunities presented by the Mercury organization to get fans hyped up about the team, loud and proud, all of it. And the Phoenix Mercury were one of the first to come up with the idea for Pride Night and to actually hold Pride Night. I mean, they've been on the cutting edge and on the right side of history time and time again. And I have such pride saying I'm the television play-by-play voice for the Phoenix Mercury.
Mm. I love that. And I feel like last year, I mean, like, you know, coming into, I guess, your first full season, you might be able to write a book about everything that kind of went down last year, I assume.
Listen.
I was praying for everyone involved with a variety of situations, but the players are going through it. But I mean, could you feel the tension and just kind of the emotional toll every day?
Oh, 100%. I mean, we started in the off season, right? Mm-hmm. Before anything happened with Brittany Griner, we see on paper that we have a roster comprised of players that will put a starting five on the floor that will all are all stars from the previous season. No other team is going to do that. Everybody's getting so excited about Las Vegas and New York this season. That was Phoenix last season going into 2022. And then Brittany Griner gets wrongfully detained. And there was just a gray cloud over the organization all season long. And I felt so bad for the players because as an announcer, I was so excited, but it was me, right? Because we weren't full excitement because of BG's terrible situation. So I can't even imagine. It was hard for me to get up for games. You know, it was my first season and I was unbelievably excited. I just had to dial it back. And so everything, it felt to me like the rest of the league was playing in color TV and we were in black and white. Like we just, whatever we did just wasn't right. It wasn't good enough, what have you. And then team chemistry was an issue. We had a divorce. I mean, what is happening? Tina's doing what? I mean, it was just surreal. And still, Skylar Diggins-Smith finds a way to make an all-star team again, flirts with scoring 600 points, made my job so easy every single night. And Diana was Diana, right? Second in the league and made three-pointers with 92. Are you kidding me? She celebrated a 40th birthday in the middle of last summer.
And she missed a lot of games.
Yes.
Yeah.
She didn't miss any games until the very end.
Yeah,
she
yeah.
31 games and then had the leg issues. We got to see the emergence of Shea Petty. Diamond DeShield was finding her way.
She was.
They just needed 100% Diamond to Shields. Like that's how thin the roster was. They needed more from her and she just physically couldn't give it because she was working her way back from not even thinking she might play basketball again. I mean, it was just a lot. So now, you know, I just came from the practice facility and it's just so light and bright. And BG, as much as she is a force on the floor, it's away from the floor. It's her in the locker room. It's her traveling. She is just a big teddy bear. And all of the tension that went on, especially at the guard position with the Mercury last season, would have been dispelled had BG been there because that's what she did in years previous. So, yeah, it was a lot, but I think we're all better for having survived it. And I know that BG in particular is really looking forward in every game she plays, in every arena, thanking the fans for their support.
I will say, watching a ton of games, I did like that, at least from the fan perspective, it didn't feel, you know, too sad or negative. I mean, I feel like y'all always gave a nod to BG. And, you know, but, I mean, you just kept the talk about hoops coming. You and I think Ann were just fantastic. So, credit to you. Cause I, as someone with ADD, I definitely just get distracted all over the place and compartmentalize so many things. So, I cannot imagine some of the background stories that, that may have gone on, especially like, I mean, and I feel bad, like, bringing up Tina Charles, but like, I know she's expecting to probably play with BG, right? You know, so there's some, you feel some empathy towards her.
And when things changed and she was asked to play the five, that didn't work. That wasn't where she wanted to be. And I get that. Look, she came to the Mercury having led the league in scoring in Washington. Like, yeah. She's a former MVP. When you sign Tina Charles to the dotted line, you know you're getting production. It just didn't fit her vision of production. So I get that. And her vision is unique and is wild when you think about it. You know, we're going to have final rosters on May 18th, and Tina Charles isn't on a roster yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something. Yeah. And I don't know enough about Vanessa to speak too much to, but the fact that they won so many games that they should not have, the Phoenix Mercury down players. I think there was a game against the Liberty. They didn't have Skylar or Diana. I think they still went off and win. It's like Shea Petty and Sophie had probably had 30 each. Yep. Just ridiculous games. The zone was like working to a T against certain teams. She would switch in and out of it. What's your opinion on her?
Vanessa was an unknown quantity, right? Not only to the league last year, but to me personally. I knew of her from Windward High School where she coached, because she coached kids like Charisma Osborne at UCLA. So from my Pac-12 women's basketball schedule, I knew of her, but I didn't know her. I tell you what, I'm still irritated that she didn't win Coach of the Year last season.
Had an argument.
With the low roster and all bells and whistles. Really? Was it that hard, Becky? Vanessa Nygaard changed her offense four times. She had an original offensive set with BG, had to change that. Then Tina Charles leaves, she had to change again. Then Skylar wasn't available for some games, she had to change again. And then a fourth time, when the injuries at the end of the season, when Skylar wasn't available because she turned out to be pregnant, and then Diana was hurt, as they go into the playoffs facing the eventual champion Aces, it was a completely different lineup and system to accommodate players that she did have healthy and available. So I was very impressed. Now she's tweaked her staff because she knows what she wants and what she's looking for. So we got a couple new faces there, but Nikki Blue returned. And I think she's just, having gone through all of that last year, is going to be a much better coach this year. And not to say that she wasn't very solid last year. You know, again, it goes back to the reps, like we were saying at the top of the show. She just, nothing is going to faze her now. And she also has the buoyancy of having.
Yeah. I think I speak for all of us when I just feel like it's going to be a good year for them. Like, it is just going to be that year where they can bounce back, where there hopefully can be some stability, where you can just kind of love around BG and just express that you're so happy that she's on the court with us every single game. But also just for the team to be able to focus on basketball. Like, credit to them last year of just, they could have focused on anything else the whole entire season, and it could not have looked how it did. And so I know, it being a player, it'll just be a breath of fresh air just to focus on basketball and celebrating the fact that, you know, our players in the league in their home. Cindy, I want to ask you, just in terms of dealing with all these different situations, being part of a team, where do your mentors come in? Who are your mentors? Who are those people that get you through those tough times and that kind of help you learn and grow along the way, even in this position right now?
Well, my first mentor is my husband, Steve Berthume. He is the television play-by-play man for the Arizona Diamondbacks. He's the reason why we moved to Arizona after 13 years at ESPN, because he messed around and got his dream job after trying for just 6 months. Whole nother telecast there. But anyway, that man has watched more women's basketball, both pro and college, as a non-super fan than any one person should, helping me find my voice. So he is first and foremost. Second is Kate Scott. I got to know her when she was at Pac-12 Network before she went to the NBA 76ers. And she has just been a ballast for me. I got to see the job that I wanted to do watching her do it. Because I had never done play-by-play before I moved west. ESPN asked me a couple of times, and I always thought, I can't travel. I never see my husband now. We work in the same building. So it just never seemed to work for my family. But then when my husband got his dream job, I was like, all right, I got to pivot. And Kate was somebody that I ran into very early when I was at Pac-12 in 2014. And I saw her excellence. And I appreciated her grind. And I was like, I want to stick with that person. And I actually affectionately call her my carrot. And when she got the 76ers job, I sent her a big plush doll carrot because she always does it the right way. And she hustles. And, you know, she's the one who told me, that's great that you're getting feedback from your husband, but reach out to your friends that you trust at ESPN, send them your tape. I also still am in contact with my favorite former professor at Washington State University, Glenn Johnson, who is now the mayor of Pullman, Washington.
Wow.
I send him stuff to critique, or if I'm on FS1 calling a men's college basketball game, hey, tune in, tell me what you think, what do you like, don't like, that kind of stuff. So yeah, just a few trusted voices, because you can't do it yourself. You can only listen to yourself and critique yourself so much. You need feedback and constructive feedback. And sometimes it hurts and sucks and whatever, but it makes you better. So, and I'm a huge believer in iron sharpening iron and turning to the people that I really trust and are good at what they do.
Mm. Yeah, I'd be so bad at giving criticism. Just don't know how to be.
Really?
How to be, when it depends, I'm right?
No problem with it.
It depends. I'm saying with people like you and Ice, like people on TV, I'm just so, it's just another level of talent. I guess you can really see the bad ones, right?
Yeah.
Like yes. They stand out so hard.
I can tell you, she came into a game and know who has done their homework and who hasn't. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And know who's buttoned up production wise and who isn't. Because once you've been on that side of the camera, you never watch television the same way again. Right?
Never. It's funny. I was watching Lakers Warriors the other day. Mm-hmm. And I think it was after, I think it was after the Lakers won. There was a typo on the lower third graphic. And it was like LA leads 3-0. My boyfriend goes, that is ridiculous. Like, come on, this is primetime TV. Like, they can't make a mistake like that.
Right.
And I'm sitting there, I'm like, babe, like, yes, but you know, it's one little typo. Like, it's just one little, he's like, but no, it's not okay. This is TV. And right. I felt so critical because I understand, like, I get it. When the littlest things happen in our productions, to which other people don't even know. Right. I think that would always be a cool story to know, is like conversations in control rooms and production meetings that equal, you know, the product that you see, but just all the different types of information we decide to share and not share and how we craft different stories. But you do become very critical. You watch everything and it's just like, I would have held that information maybe to the third quarter if I knew that I was going to bring in this later. Like, it is so interesting. Just how you do that. Yeah, for sure.
It helps you get better, right? Because
I'll
watch a Connecticut telecast and I'm so sorry for your loss with Barry Sachs, that I'm still trying to get over that. But anyway, he was so great to me at ESPN. He would let me scream at the walls, like, why won't they put me on women's college basketball? Why won't they let me host this, that, and the other? And at the time, this is like 2004, 2005, I'm hosting women's college basketball and I'm asking to take the show on the road and I'm asking to be the primary host and not have male host. It went from Trey Wingo to Kevin Negandhi. And I love Kevin and I love Trey, but I was just like, a woman should be doing that. And I was told by my bosses, no, a man has to host, because if people are flipping around, especially males 18 to 35, they will stop the remote if they see someone who looks like them talking about the sport and maybe stay. It's like, well, it's not like I can change genders right now. I just, you know, but I would go into Barry's office and he would let scream the paint off the walls about the absurdity, and then I can move in. So I owe him everything. But as you guys put together your telecast, I was very impressed with you always come out of commercial break with the fit walk. And I'm like, every team in the league should be doing it, and should be doing it that way, because it's just structured part of the telecast. And the fact that you guys always have, and in the times that I've tuned in, a sideline. I think every team should have a sideline reporter, and we don't in Phoenix. And I feel like we're just not serving the fan to our maximum ability because of that.
Yeah. That's a great point. A great point.
It's wild. Like the things that I'm concerned with at work right now are making sure all the fonts are the same size and the PowerPoint decks I put together, you know? But like, Cindy, you were part of SportsCenter in like the heyday of television, because it's not really, it's nothing.
300-pound gorilla.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the cable TV without live sports to me is just, I mean, you look at stock numbers, whatever, or look at the number of subscribers, it's just kind of not the way technology went, you know? So you were kind of there in its heyday. And I know, I mean, I've read you talk about being on during some incredible sports moments, but for you, what was something super different that kind of changed the way you felt about sports and its connection to the people?
Ooh, I would say it goes to my hardest day at work. And that was the day after Kay Yao passed away. I was charged with interviewing Pat Summitt. She was so gracious to come on just hours after her dear friend had passed away. And I had put her on such a pedestal, as every women's basketball fan does. And she was tearing up and I was tearing up, and it was the hardest thing I've ever had to get through. And I just kept sitting there just admiring her strength and just her commitment to wanting to share Kay's message and the power of her life. So I miss those big platform opportunities to command people's attention. That was one thing that ESPN did for me in particular, in certain instances. And I love the jobs that I have now, whether it's Pac-12 or Athletes Unlimited or Phoenix Mercury, that take up a lot of my calendar. I just don't have the reach that I did with those four little letters from Bristol.
Yeah. I mean, still always doing amazing work for sure, but it's so cool to see and know. Like, I mean, I think you can tell with like Scott Van Pelt, for example, like they have
one of the coolest dudes ever, right? To work with her.
I know. I mean, it's jealous that I'm name dropping people that you're like, you could probably be bros with, but you can just tell that you're not only good at your job, but you're super passionate about sports.
Yep.
And that creates like quality entertainment and feeds not just males 18 to 35, but across the spectrum, all the way, you know, girls coming up 5 years old talking about, you know, the New York Liberty, like saw it happen like 2 days ago walking in Brooklyn. So really cool stuff. And I just thank you for your service to sports.
Oh, thanks. No, I love that you mentioned Scott. He was always great about, because you got to listen when I'm in a sports center meeting, I was the one that was always, oh, we're just going to put up a graphic that the Liberty are playing the Mercury. And I'm like, just a graphic? We're not going to have 15 seconds of video with that, blah, blah. So when that graphic came on, trust and believe, I gave 45 seconds of content and breakdown about that one game. And Scott, when I would work with him, he could have complained, but he's like, no, that's great. Yeah. Who should I do? Diana Taurasi? Okay. You got Penny Taylor. All right. Blah, blah. And he would chime in and get on board. So the bosses wouldn't give me static back. He was a great ally in that respect.
Would you say the culture was like that across ESPN, like as far as like the anchors go? Like to be on that platform, you had to possess a certain passion about sports.
Oh, 1,000%. Yeah. No, you didn't get hired because you were a fan of, you know, breaking down numbers on the stock market. It was, where'd you grow up? What were you a fan of? What are you passionate about? All of that. And it was funny because there was a time in the early 2000s, well, late 90s, before I got there. I got there late 99, September-ish, where, you know, Stuart Scott is blowing up, Rich Eisen, all of that, Dan Patrick. So it was becoming those guys being bigger personalities than SportsCenter. You know, people were tuning in because they wanted to see Stu and then that whole deal. And the bosses wanted to tamp that down, right? They're like, nobody's bigger than ESPN, blah, blah, blah. And so they put out this edict. You cannot say what school you graduated from. You can't cheer extra hard, blah, blah, blah. Well, Stuart's got like, take your little rule. He would just be out there, you know, North Carolina, this, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to do that for Washington State. This is great.
Right.
You know?
So,
and because Stuart, and then when Van Pelt started hosting SportsCenter, he did the same thing for Maryland. So then it was okay. But those guys because they just thought it was so absurd in their head. They're like, no, we're doing this. I mean, even when Twitter first launched in like, what was that, 06? ESPN was hesitant to put our Twitter handles. I mean, it sounds silly now, but when it first started, they were hesitant to put our Twitter handles on the graphic with our name. And then it became a requirement. And then some guys went against the grain, right? Like my friend Neil Everett and John Anderson. They're like, well, no, I'm not doing this Twitter. Ah, that's just extra work that I'm not going to get paid for. To this day, they don't pay attention to Twitter, which is hilarious. But yeah, so it's just, it was interesting in the culture that it was, yeah, you had to be a diehard sports fan. And we all loved it because of that.
Mm. It's so refreshing just to hear your stories because you've been a part of this industry for so long and you've seen it change. But one of the elements that we've definitely seen change is just women calling more games. How important is it that women call more games and that they're calling games at all levels and regardless of sport?
I think it's incredible. And honestly, if I'm being completely honest, I never thought I would see the day that not one, but two women are NBA team broadcasters. I just didn't think that that was possible. And now we have, you know, Hannah Storm is calling NFL games on Amazon Prime. I didn't think that would happen. I always thought there had to be some sort of tie between playing the sport. So I thought football was out. I thought basketball was out unless it was WNBA, unless you were an analyst, because we'd seen some analysts get into that NBA space. So I'm glad that my gut was wrong and that my perception of how bosses could look at things. But I tell you what, if we hadn't witnessed the year of our Lord 2020, I don't know that we would see Kate Scott with the 76ers or Lisa Byington with the Bucks. That was so transformational when we're all at home on lockdown, right? And we're watching George Floyd get murdered on TV. And everybody has to deal with that because we don't have any other choice.
Right.
And I think because of that seismic event regarding racial and social justice, it made the bosses that had normally made the decision to go with the white guy again and again and again to say, you know what? We can't do it that way anymore. We have got to pivot off of this. It was George Floyd and it was also Maria Taylor's with ESPN that I think created a watershed moment for that company in particular, because they were very contractual. When Rachel Nichols said she had a contract to do a certain job, she's not kidding. That's exactly how they would spell it out in their employee deals. And so I see Rachel's side of it completely. But I also get where Maria was coming from. It doesn't let the cream rise to the top, right? If you are the best person for the job, it shouldn't matter what the contract says. And how that whole mess was handled was ridiculous. I'm sure Maria's happy about it now, cashing those checks at NBC. And again, she's using that as an opportunity to create space for somebody else, right? I first met Maria Taylor at a National Black Journalists Association conference. And we literally had been given marching orders from ESPN at that NABJ to find the next Erin Andrews, but she's got to be Black. I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm in this mixer and I see Maria across the room because she's very tall. She's like 6'2". And I go over to her and I talk to her for a couple minutes and I was like, okay, well, mission accomplished. I found it. Back to my guy, Al Jaffe at the time. And I was like, Al, you need to talk to that young woman who attends the University of Georgia in the corner. She's the next one.
And my finder's fee is this percentage.
Exactly.
Right.
I did Roz Gold on Wude's edition.
Wow.
I did Ina Robinson's edition. I know talent. I should have been a talent agent, actually. Now that I think about it, I did it all wrong. But you can just see and what they have and what they bring to the table and how they comport themselves and their passion and how they relay that to you. It was very identifiable. What stunned me is that Maria didn't get more opportunity right away, but that was part of the machine at the time. It just, it didn't foster growth like it does now. I see so many different faces, especially women of color, getting opportunity to do things at ESPN. And that just was not the case when I was there. It was me and one other person.
Yeah. I mean, I remember starting that book, Those Guys Have All the Fun, about, and I, for some reason I got busier, but like after this conversation, I want to go finish the book. Like, I mean, it's such a fascinating time period. And granted, like, you know, hats off, you know, for going through the struggles that, are essentially paving the way for so many different, women and, you know, people of different nationalities to come through and have an opportunity. And that's probably what they, everybody wants, is an opportunity. Because talent's there.
Yeah.
It was, I never had to wait for the ladies' room. I tell you that. Linda Cohen joke about that all the time. It's like, you don't have to wait in line. You can have the whole space to yourself.
do want to get back to some like WNBA preview. I mean, I could definitely ask you like a million questions about your past all the time, but so thank you about that. But this coming season, we obviously have our super teams, but outside of the Mercury, just from what you know, what you've heard, who are some teams that you're just super excited to watch play? And it could be because of roster changes or because they were building something great last year.
Not just one, two.
Okay.
I've got my eye on the Washington Mystics.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Elena Deladon is healthy. And I tell you what, Tosh Cloud, you think she was impressive last summer? She's going to destroy that assist record. And she's a ton of threes. Those guys are scary. And then Atlanta, because Dan Hutter, the GM who put together primarily the roster that we see, minus Candace Parker with the Aces, is running the show in Atlanta. And he is drafting well, and he is signing well. Alicia Gray dominated Athletes Unlimited Pro Women's Hoop season two. She must have finished in the top four on the final day of the season because she stuffs stats. And she is one of the first women that I have seen that can do a chase down defensive block from the behind deal like LeBron James does, right? Yeah. Leash flies down the floor and somehow gets it clean, doesn't get called for the foul. So athletic. I asked Cheryl Swoops, who reminded her most of her in season two, she said Leash. And she's just scratching the surface of how good she's going to be. So I think if she's unleashed, she will destroy the competition opposite her. And I think if they can get those new pieces to mesh with the old pieces, I love what Ari McDonald was doing in her sophomore season. She's ready to make some hay. I really like Atlanta. So those two teams in particular have my intense attention.
I love those two teams for different reasons or different players. Washington Mystics, you know, they talk about their defense all the time, right? In media day, and we've seen different posts, they're talking about defense. They added Brittany Sykes to their defensive catalog. Someone that is going for an all defensive award every single year. Playing with Brittany, living with her at Syracuse, she cares about defense. And so I love that she's just going to embody that and really take, I think, the Mystics up another level. And then in terms of Tanisha Wright in Atlanta, I just believe in her. Yeah. Like, she just gives me the feeling that she is building something, that she's got the players that are coming along with her. And I'm excited to see the growth in Ryan Howard. Just her playing another year, going overseas, doing what she's doing, but coming back and now being a more mature superstar on the floor. And I think Tanisha Wright can get the most out of her in her young years.
Yeah. Let me add, I gave you my 1A's, right? 1B, Indiana. Nalissa Smith is a problem. And now you can focus on her because Aaliyah Boston is there. That team has some really nice pieces. Lex Wall was the defensive player of the year season two for AU Pro Hoops.
She looked good.
Won the whole darn thing. I called my first 50-point game in my career because Smith went off in the GM game. She is special.
Yeah, I really like being in person and seeing what Lexi Holt was doing. I was like, okay, this bump might be real next year. I did not believe in in Lexi Hull, like at all until like seeing it up close. And then, you know, watching when I left Dallas and I was like, wow. Okay. And then Melissa, I feel like every game just was getting, you know, felt like a triple double. So definitely they're on my radar. It's super cool this year. I mean, as I've told you before with the betting stuff, but we're getting lines for women's sports that we've never seen before. Like we have WNBA regular season win totals. And it's so funny that you brought up like the Dream and the Fever. Cause I'm like, I already bet these overs. I tweeted about it. But the Dream's win total line was at 7.5 for the entire season. Right.
That's a tad low.
Yeah, with 40 games when they won 7 last year. Okay.
Right?
Yeah. And the Dream was 19.5. And I want to say Mercury were probably right around 22 or 20, 21. Some were at 20. Okay. Mystics were the only ones higher than that besides the super teams who were right at 28, 29. But, and then you brought up Natasha Cloud, her season average, like you could bet above or below, but it's at 6.5. And I'm like, have they not been watching the last 2 years?
Yeah. I was going to say, that's an easy one. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I loved it before, but I was like, I'll sleep on it. This was last night. And then now after this call, I will be doing something and tweeting about it in terms of an over with Natasha Cloud's assist. So I do love that. Getting into the Mercury, what do you think the ceiling is for this team, realistically, and knowing that there are super teams, but no championship is, guaranteed in any sport. So, what do you believe the ceiling is for the Mercury?
I can easily see them making the Western Conference Finals because BG is back for her 10th season and she is the best post player in the world. So she's there to build around and she's got shooters everywhere. I can see that both the general manager and our new assistant general manager, Monica, have been very intentional about making whoever is not named BG, they have to shoot the three. Mm-hmm. I mean, Megan Gustafson, that lefty magic, is nailing threes. Like her ability to breathe is a part of the process. Like, she has really locked in. That is something that has improved markedly for her in the offseason. So a four that can pull the defense away from the basket, open space up for BG. You got Breezy there rebounding. Sophie Cunningham has developed a mid-range game. Oh. She called Suns pre and post all NBA season long and became a fan of Devin Booker's game. So Sophie, known for three-point shooting, she hit 70 last year, wants to finish in the top 10 in three-point makes this year, will also be going off the bounce and pulling up for 15. So I really like the team's ability to fill up the box score and wreck some people. There are some shooters. Sam Thomas worked on her three-point shot. If she makes the team and gets run, she's out there to shoot threes. So, three-point shooting, huge. Mo Jeff, she came to the team and she
love her.
She was second in the WNBA last season in 3-point percentage of 47%. So
had a damn triple double. Mo Jeff triple double last year. People forget.
Yes. Yeah. Minnesota against Dallas.
Yeah. The exact game. I mean, I'm like 99% sure I bet on that game. It was on the right side of history, but it's like Mo Jeff is a special place in my heart with how well she did last year.
Look, she was a part of that last UConn win, right? 2016 completed the Breonna Stewart four-peat, and UConn hasn't won a championship yet since.
We gotta clip that.
No, it's funny. Sabina Westbrook and I got into it in Dallas because I literally got up at some speaking engagement. I was like, UConn is not making the championship game. Mark it down. I don't even think they're going to make the final four, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, that's blasphemous. How could you say that? I was like, have you seen the team? The two best teams are hurt right now. Like, I don't know what you're watching, but no big no fun. Come on. So but whatever. So we got into it a little bit and I was kind of smug when UConn was eliminated. I'm like, E-Dub, what happened last night?
That's funny.
But I love that for women's basketball, right? Because forever it was UConn. And before that, it was Tennessee. And so it's so wonderful to see South Carolina get a couple. LSU is back and finally gets one. You know, it just makes things so much more interesting.
Yeah.
The numbers about how many people bet on it. Like,
yes.
I mean, just mind-blowing the amount of attention, because it's, to me, it's great. It's more viewers, more people getting exposed to the opportunity to watch women play basketball, which is a great product as it is. Yeah, it's just stop listening to, you know, Joe Schmo on the internet who says it's not cool, you know? Like,
Dano, you would have loved this, but I was in a conversation with friends the other day going to bat for women's basketball and people watching more. And I said, if you don't believe me, start gambling on it. Yeah. I said, I have a friend of mine who was growing the game because he gambles, because he talks about it, because he has these conversations, because people are invested in money and making money. And I was, but I was like, it is another avenue that we can use just to grow the game in terms of, especially the W, which is, oh my goodness, last year, constantly talking to Dano about how games went, but also, hey, this is what I cashed in on. This is what we got to fix for the next time. It just adds another element to being invested. And then also more TV deals. You know, we talked about Ion getting in on the games. We talked about a 40-game season with the W. So, Cindy, to kind of close this, I really just want to ask you, what are some goals you have in the future, short term, for the W to grow? How can it continue to expand? How can it continue to pull in more of his audience?
Well, I ultimately agree with the GOAT on my team, Diana Taurasi, who says, ultimately, we've got to play when basketball is being played in the winter for the WNBA to really get into that next stratosphere. But until we can get there, I think it is very critical, like we were just talking about, connecting the bridge between college and pro. I can't tell you how many times I've asked a collegiate basketball player, who's your favorite WNBA player? And I get told an NBA name. That can't happen. I mean, you have to aspire to what you want to do. That's great that you think Kevin Durant is really good at basketball. I do too. But who is the woman that you are forming your game after? I was so excited to talk to Jenny Sims today. I was like, who's your favorite player? Simone Augustus. I'm like, I see that in you. I see that when you go off the bounce. I see that you worked on that over the summer. I get it. So I think it'll help fans go from one to the other, right? Because we stop playing college basketball, we crown a champion, and then a week later we're having the WNBA draft. So for me, it would be really connecting those dots between college fandom and WNBA so that we're not just getting 9.9 million or 10 million for a NCAA championship game, that we're getting those numbers for the WNBA championship as well.
Yeah.
Well, and that TV deal is coming up, one more year, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I expect a Brinkstruck from said ESPN or whoever. I mean, if you look at what MLS got and compared numbers, I do some basic financial analysis for a living. I could forecast how big this deal could be if it's done right.
I tell you what, ESPN has done a good job of being a steward to this point, right?
Sure.
You know, they, especially in the last couple of years, they have been very intentional about giving a variety of women's sports their shine. But I would love to see somebody else swoop in, Apple, Amazon, whoever's got that exact money. Dano, you know more about that. But to just give it a fresh perspective, and so that it could be priority one. Yeah. Because we know what ESPN, NFL 1, NBA 2, and women's basketball, where does that, you know, I mean, we've got to deal with Major League Baseball for Sunday Night Baseball. So that's why we couldn't have the championship game on a Sunday night. Those things, like, if we can't have the NCAA women's championship game on a Sunday night because of Sunday Night Baseball, then ESPN's priorities aren't quite where they need to be. So let's let somebody else at the table, let them into the party room and see what they can cook up and what kind of priorities that they could have for both the NCAA championships in women's basketball and the WNBA.
It's so brilliant. It's so funny that it took me, 2 months now to figure out that's why the game was played at 3:30 Eastern time. I'm sitting there at this Action Network party and someone's like, hey, you know, can Caitlin Clark and Iowa win it all? I'm like, absolutely not. They're like, why not? I'm like, they're going to beat South Carolina, but they'll lose in the championship. They're like, why? And I'm like, not in primetime. Caitlin Clark in primetime? Absolutely. But the game is at 2:30 local time in Dallas. I don't know why. Makes zero sense to me. Yeah.
Now you know.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Solved a huge problem. I mean, I would have came back to that next year, probably, if it's still on there. I mean, yeah, what ESPN probably is like a 10-year deal, I think. Yeah. But, oh, God, this conversation has been awesome, Cindy. Yeah. I'm so, so pumped. I got to go out to Phoenix and see a game there. Hearing y'all both talk about this experience.
Yes. Let me know. We have great restaurants here in the Phoenix metro area. So let me know. I'll hook you up.
Yeah, I'll I won't bring Ollie, but maybe the wife.
Okay.
And yeah, we'll make it happen. Are you coming to call Liberty in this year? No.
No. Oh. I won't do Liberty. I all the road games we'll call off a monitor.
We hate that. Let's fix that, WNBA.
Yes, yes.
And everybody.
Yeah. Impressive when Connecticut pulled through and they pulled through with their television broadcast team. Aces did the same thing. I'm like, okay, I see you. Make sure my bosses see you too, please.
Awesome. Cindy, thank you so much for joining us and thank you for your time. It's been really awesome.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate you guys. Keep crushing it.